Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your family. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make our world a better place. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward this show to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from the subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, I want you to know that I am truly grateful to all of you that take your time to watch or listen to this show, especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions, because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network. Download a copy, give it 21 days, and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your loved ones. And if you would like to also send those comments to us via our website, we will read some of them on the air. Now, as many of you know me and have listened to the show, you know that sometimes I believe that the best way for us to make a positive difference in the world is to start with our young people. Well, our guest today is doing just that, and that is something that I love. Now, our topic today is stop worrying about your anxious child and learn how to manage your child's anxiety. Now, stay with us on this subject because our guest shares the very techniques that she uses in her own life, and her timely and urgent message to parents is your child deserves a bright future. Stop worrying and learn how to start managing your child's anxiety today. So with us is Tonya Crombie, PhD, and she is certified as a life coach who loves helping parents manage their children's anxiety. She has an MBA and a doctorate in industrial organizational psychology. She lives just outside of New Orleans, and as she puts it, with her awesome husband, her two amazing kids, including her beautifully perfect anxious child, and two extremely barky dogs, which we're hoping we won't hear from today during the show. So, Tonya, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan. I'm so honored to be here on the show. I love what you do and the message that you're putting out in the world. So I feel really, really grateful to you, speaking of gratitude, for allowing me an opportunity just to be here and talk with your listeners this week.
Well, for me, I feel like with doing this show with you is sort of taking me back to my roots. This show started as Answers for the Family. And some of the very first shows that we did, I think it's about 12 years ago, was based on subjects like this. How can we work with our children that are dealing with certain issues? Well, now, 12 years later, with things like COVID and just a lot of negativity being put out in the world, I'm guessing that that's a far bigger problem now than it was 12 years ago. So share with me a little bit about the subject and other than dealing with your own child, what brought you into focusing on this so much?
Well, I always like to be sure people know, because when you, like my little bio at the bottom has doctor in front of it, and you know, I'm a certified life coach, and I have actually been coaching for many, many years. I don't even like to say it anymore because it starts to age me at this point. It's probably longer than some of your listeners have been alive. So it can come across as, oh, she talks about this because this is, she went to school and studied psychology, or she talks about this, you know, because she's a coach. But the reality is I talk about this because I'm a mom who I will assume was at one point exactly where some of your listeners are, maybe right now, maybe people who are listening right now, that you are feel like you've done the things, you are doing what you think is going to help, and yet you are still struggling, your child is struggling, you are the parent who is laying in bed, you know, doubting yourself, thinking, I screwed that up again today, well, that was another disaster, because that is me. That was me. I was the person who just felt like I was I was blowing it as a parent. And so that, through a journey of really kind of hitting rock bottom and getting desperate and trying things, I discovered some things that really transformed my family. And mm-hmm. not just my anxious child, but the entire family dynamics have changed for the better. And that's why I do this.
All right. Well, I'm feeling a lot of synergy with you, is that, you know, when as I became or began working with at-risk youth, I found myself talking with parents and I'm explaining to them how I'm going to show up and I'm going to calmly take their child to a specialized program to get some help. Mm-hmm. And I realized that a lot of the parents were coming off defeated or, you know, as if they've somehow failed or something like that. And so I found myself sharing with them stories. And I would say, first of all, let me explain something. You could probably do a better job of getting, at the time, my four-year-old to go to sleep at night without getting, I need one more glass of water, or can I have a glass of milk, or can you rub my back, or can you read me another story? And I told him, I said, you'd be better at getting them to do that than I would because they already know our buttons. Right. And so I said, mine know my buttons. Yours know your buttons. So when I'm coming into that, I have a little bit of an advantage other than training and things like that. Just the sheer fact that they don't know my buttons. So I love the fact that you talk about we're all trying to do the best we can too. Mm-hmm. And then if we've managed to learn some things, we're going to share it with other people. And I'm glad that you're doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like one of the things I'll share with any parent who is feeling that way right now is that bad parents, because that's what we tell ourselves, like, I'm a bad parent. I used to say that all the time to myself. I'm a bad mom. And bad moms don't worry about being bad moms. Bad parents aren't laying in bed worried about it. They're sleeping fine. Mm-hmm. So reassure yourself right now that if you're worried, you're a good parent. That's what good parents do.
Yeah, I get it. Well, one of the things that we're all dealing with now is, you know, the changes that we've seen. Obviously, COVID changed the way that kids interact with other kids. It changed the way that they're interacting with their schools. What are some of the changes that you've seen, and what are some of the tools that maybe can help parents get through this that many of them are dealing with right now?
Well, what I've seen has been kind of an interesting two sides of the same coin in some ways. I have seen some children who were really struggling before the pandemic, like got better. Mm-hmm. Strangely, not having to go to school, not having to do sports, not having to be in choir or swim practice or whatever it was that was causing anxiety, when that went away, a lot of kids, their anxiety seemed to really dramatically improve. However, there were some children who hadn't been struggling before who started struggling with the pandemic. And then there were some in the middle who kind of had some issues. And this was just another thing to worry about. If they were the worriers, this gave them one more thing.
Now, would part of that be, because I know one of the biggest issues for kids is their friends are judging them. You know, they go to school and, you know, they're being judged on everything from the way they talk to what they wear to their, you know, who their friends are and stuff. Could some of this have actually been somewhat of a positive, because now that they're not with them every day, that they're not feeling as judged, even though the friends may be well-meaning?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The social pressure that children feel is exponentially more than we did as children. And I do think sometimes we as parents struggle a little bit, because that's how we relate, is what was it like for me? That's the only experience I have, mm-hmm. of being a first grader. So why is first grade so different? But it is very, very different. The kids do feel and notice. And, you know, I hear stories that are they're painful stories for parents and the kids that are afraid to eat because of, you know, what other kids, they don't want to their food to be weird. They don't want to have a stomach ache. One, I heard of a child who their stomach would make noise after they ate, so they would just not eat all day, or, you know, things like that, that the kids just kind of build up in their heads of, if I do this, everyone else will know, everyone else will judge, everyone else cares.
So if you're speaking like directly to the parents, how can the parents help their child through this? Because I know many of the kids really are not comfortable opening up. So I think the, you know, obviously we need communication, but sometimes it isn't as easy for a parent to stimulate the communication, especially if you get, you know, 1 to 2 syllable answers. So what are some tools that you would give parents to be able to keep the communication open that allows them to be there for them?
Well, the thing that I say over and over to anyone who will listen is the best way to help someone else manage their anxiety is to manage your own anxiety first. Mm. And as much as that's not necessarily, we all want this magic potion that will take care of them. But at the end of the day, that is my secret sauce, is managing your own, because you are feeling anxiety when your child is struggling. There's nothing more painful or anxiety inducing than a struggling child. So doing the things, and this is a twofold answer. It helps in two ways. So first off, when my child, as I said, I have experienced this with both of my children. I have 2 children. Both of them have had their struggles. And when they were struggling, it would immediately send me into kind of a panic mode myself of, what do I do? How do I help? How do I fix this? And I'd find myself starting to swirl. And if I could then step out of that and get myself into a calm place, I was much more able to help. I was much more able to see what was actually going on. Because a lot of times, like you said, the one syllable answers might make us kind of angry, like they're being disrespectful, they're being rude. But in my, when I'm in my best self, I could see, actually, this is a kid who's struggling right now. It's not a kid who's being disrespectful or rude. It's a kid who's having some problems. Temper tantrums, often same thing. It's not a kid who's being bad. It's a kid who's just got these big emotions and they don't know how to manage them. And the last thing we need is to add my big emotions. So that calming myself down helped me handle and respond and just be a better mom. And so here's the second great benefit of doing this. I was able to model how to handle situations. Mm-hmm. And I would often, as I got better at it, because it is a growing process and I'm still learning, but as I get better, I start talking out, saying it out loud, being really, really, you know, overt in, like, the child is having the temper tantrum. This is starting to freak me out. I will say out loud, I'm starting to feel overwhelmed right now. I need to take a few deep breaths. I'm going to sit here and breathe for a few minutes. I'm going to breathe in for 3. And breathe out for 3. And at no time am I saying, you need to do this, child. They just watch me calm myself down. And somewhere in their head, that is like, huh, it seems to work. But it's not the energy of, I'm going to tell you what to do. Because kids don't react to that very well.
Right. Well, and that sounds like one of the tools of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, where you're doing matching and pacing. So you're going to try to match their, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, but not in a negative way. And the pacing part of it is that you're now explaining what you're doing in hopes that they now follow suit. So I love that. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Now, one of the areas that I know, and I've had lots of people on the show, and I look at this as such a blessing for me, because, and I just had somebody recently over the weekend that asked me, they said, wow, I didn't realize you had done that show for so long. Why do you keep doing it? And I said, because I think I get more out of it than anybody else by having great experts like yourself that come on and we talk about different things that can help everybody. But there's also the fact that there are people that are constantly offering advice. Mm-hmm. And there's a story that I wrote many years ago, and it was published in, I want to say, Treatment Today or Psychology Today, something like that. And I called it, I don't remember what I called it. It'll come to me in a minute. But I was talking about what can happen when you start listening to every neighbor or every person that's ever raised a child, and mm-hmm. and their child is different. And that's mm-hmm. the whole thing that you know, I tell a lot of parents is that they go, well, you know, my next door neighbor said that when their son Billy, when this happened, you know, that this was a good way to go. And I said, you know, did they talk to a professional? Because I don't know the issues. I don't know their son Billy. So mm-hmm. I don't know that what you're now wanting to do is going to be a good fit. So talk a little bit about, you know, where parents need to kind of look to an educational consultant, look to a psychologist, look to a therapist, and figure out what is going to be the best way, because the advice of every neighbor may not be the best fit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fairness, the advice of every expert, you know, my advice may not be the best fit. Yeah. The key, and this again, I've walked this journey as a parent as well, and I definitely had, because I had a child, one of my children, I would consider, this is how I described her as a baby, was she was reactive. So she just reacted to everything. She was hungry, if she was tired, if, you know, so she had she's a big emotion baby, high highs and low lows. That's what I also call her, my high, high, low, low child. And so a high, high, low, low child evokes a lot of unsolicited advice at the grocery store and places like, as you can imagine, yeah. You know, we did have the timeout in the grocery store and things like that, that people would give me their views on. And it actually is very related to what I said before about when I allowed that to get into my head and get me to a kind of a spirally panicky, oh, well, they said this means they all think I don't know what I'm doing. Clearly, I don't know what I'm doing because people are telling me I don't know what I'm doing. You know, all that kind of, that energy was not the best mom, for sure. Not the best Tanya out there. But when I could, you know, take the deep breath and just calm down enough to say, what feels right, because we do all have that kind of deep inner sense of this is the right thing. Mm-hmm. Even though the next door neighbor says you need to be punishing them, if it feels wrong to you and your deep inner knowing says, I don't think I need to be punishing, I think there's something going on, I say trust that. Trust the you know, that's how you choose the doctor that you're going to listen to, the psychologist. I had a client once, a parent client, who was working with, you know, the expert, and the expert had very strict rules about this is what you do in this situation. And the client hired me to coach her through how bad she felt about following the expert's rules. Mm. Which to me was a sign that maybe the expert's rules weren't the right fit for her.
Right. Yeah. And because every person is different and every child is different, and which makes the situation different. So absolutely. So along those lines, where you're helping them as a coach, what do you advise parents to create the best support system that works for them and their child?
Yeah, I have, you know, my own version. Like, if a lot of your listeners may be fans of Brené Brown, I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown's work. And, you know, she has the little 1-inch square sheet of paper that she uses to write everyone's name that she cares will value their opinion. I think that's a great technique. But I, my version of that is sort of, I call it the circle. And I have a circle. And if you're in the circle, you are, you know, you get an opinion. And if you're not, it doesn't mean I don't love you or that I don't value or I don't want to be your friend. It just means that, you know, I keep that circle of people who, and I have a, like, some criteria. they are people who love me unconditionally or love my child unconditionally, or, you know, if there are things that can get you out of the circle, like if I feel like there's a sense of like satisfaction in seeing someone else struggle, that's a sign that maybe they shouldn't be in my circle. And so that's how I recommend everybody kind of come up with those criteria of who gets in. And if your mother-in-law, you can love her, but if she doesn't meet the criteria, she doesn't get to be in the circle. And your next door neighbor, or even your best friend from high school, you know, you can decide who gets in and who doesn't.
Yeah, that's a good point. So along those lines, share a little bit about, so you're working with somebody as their coach, and they're sharing with you how anxious their child is, but yet what you're recognizing is how anxious they are. Mm-hmm. How do you determine which one is causing the other?
You know what? I don't care who's yeah. You know, because it doesn't matter. And it doesn't, I don't know that it's helpful for me to say, well, your child's making you anxious or you're making your child anxious. Because in reality, it's always both. It's always both. And it's chicken and the egg. We will never be able to go back in time to say, where did it start? It just is at this point, and we are triggering each other. In fact, you know, my child is old enough that we actually say that out loud. I will say, I am feeling, you know, I am picking up on your, and I'm starting to get anxious myself. And when I get anxious, you know, I start getting short of patience and not answering the best way. So I'll say all of that now. I just tell her, I just had that conversation earlier. You know, last week she called me from school and I was like, okay, I'm about to go into a meeting. I'm getting triggered. I'm not going to answer very well. Let me call you later and have this conversation. So,
And that makes sense, because what you're saying is be self-aware.
Yeah.
And I think where I was trying to go with, because I was starting to envision cases where we're going in to help a young person and to take them to a specialized program. And I've asked the parent not to be in the room while we're, you know, they were there to introduce us, but then we've dismissed them. And psychologically, we're doing that so that the child will now focus on us and not try to push their buttons. But I was thinking of a particular case where the parent kept coming back in.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we were at a real calm place explaining where we're going, what we're doing. And you, parent, every time you came back in, you ramped up the anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of what I was thinking about is that when you're working with them and explaining to them what needs to be done, and yet they seem to be ramping it up rather than, you know, then allowing the child to actually de-escalate. In fact, and what I was doing was NLP, because the child initially was so worked up that I had to de-escalate them, but yet we had the parent that just kept doing it. So, but I liked your point, I think, is that be self-aware first. If you can be self-aware, then you're not going to come in and do those types of things, which I like.
No, in fact, what I would guess, I wasn't there, but my hypothesis is that was a parent who was feeling lots and lots of anxiety about what was happening in the room.
And
what does it mean about me? We all have those. Like, I need to explain myself because he's going to tell a different story and I want you to know my side. And all of those are, again, it's, you know, I use a model that comes from a positive intelligence. You know, we all have our model. So my positive intelligence model breaks us all people into, we have saboteurs and we have our sage, and the one sage is our true who we are, but we all have saboteur thoughts in our head about, and so that person was totally being controlled by saboteurs in that moment. And had they been able to step away and be into sage and realize that none of that, even if the child does tell you a story about what a terrible parent they are, that's okay. That's totally okay. They can have their story and it doesn't change me in any way, really. You know, my child has a therapist. And her relationship with her therapist is her own. Mm-hmm. I do not know what they talk about. If she goes in and tells her therapist what a terrible mother I am, that's okay. It's totally okay.
It's very open and very logical of you. I don't know that all of us are able to maintain that position all the time.
No, I'm not either all the time. Yeah. There are times that I'm like, oh, I hope she doesn't tell her that story. But but in the grand scheme of things, I can say it's not my business what they talk about. It's their business.
All right. Well, and we're going to take a break in a couple minutes. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to go over, we've got a listener question that has come in. And so I'd like to go ahead and read this, but then I'd like to take a break. So I'd like everybody to stay with us so that we can then get that answer. Now, this question reads, my 16-year-old daughter has become disconnected emotionally from all of the family the last 6+ months. She says it is the only way that she can cope with the horrible situation around us. Her school is mandating masks, so she wants to be homeschooled, as she is 100% anti-vaccine and anti-mask. She sits in her room reading or watching movies like a zombie most of the day. Is she suppressing her anxiety or fear? My husband and I haven't a clue what to do. We just ordered your book, but are wondering what your thoughts on how she is behaving. And this is from Alexandra in New York. And if we can just take a moment for everybody, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I'd like to have Tonya tell us a little bit more about what these parents can do with their 16-year-old daughter. You're listening to Answers Network. We'll be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are talking with Dr. Tonya Crombie, and we are really going into some questions now that are coming in from you, the listeners, and I want to thank you. When you take the time to do this, this lets me know that that we're providing the service that we're trying to do, which is to provide answers for you in the situations that you're in. Now, the question that we had right before the break was, it's a family that has a 16-year-old daughter who has now been sent back to school but doesn't want to go to school because she doesn't want to deal with the, I guess, judging about her position in regards to not wanting to put a vaccine in her body and not wanting to have to wear a mask. So rather than doing the homeschooling, she's sitting around watching movies, and I guess the parents are asking if she's suppressing her anxiety or fear, but the parents are getting very worried. Tonya, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say for sure if she is. She definitely could be. And that is, in my experience, one thing with adolescents I do see quite a bit is they numb themselves from their feelings, and they use their phones and they use Netflix and Hulu and that sort of thing. It's a great way to just sort of zone out. They game. Some of my gamer adolescents are also just numbing themselves from having to feel what they're feeling. So it is possible. I can't say for sure. As a parent, two things off the top of my head that I think might be avenues to consider One is to try to talk to her with real, genuine, open-minded curiosity. And that is often difficult for us as parents because we have our preconceived ideas of how things should be, what they should be doing. We already, mm-hmm. we think we know what they are going through. We know what the answers is. And so it's getting yourself in the right headspace. And then like a anthropologist who is studying a little, you know, culture, your daughter has created her culture. You're an anthropologist who wants to understand the culture. So with no preconceived, that's where it goes wrong, is when you're like, they say, well, this is how I feel. And you say, that is not how you feel. I, you know, any of that is going to shut the conversation down right. immediately. But to be very calm and detached and say, I want to understand what's going on. I want to understand why you're doing this. Like, and try and get a sense. And they are difficult to get to answer. But so you really have to work on picking the perfect opportunity when both you and your daughter are in the right headspace to have the conversation. Some of my best opportunities were driving the car. Mm-hmm. If I would, you know, and I, like, once, even after my daughter has, she drives now, but occasionally she'll say, like, will you drive me to go get Chick-fil-A? And I'm like, absolutely. Never say no to that. That is like the best opportunities mm-hmm. you get. You're driving, you're not looking at them, and you can casually ask questions and get answers because they're not looking at you. And it's so, invite her to go get Canes or Chick-fil-A or whatever that, you know, teenagers run on fast food and they love it. So use that to your advantage. I know it's not the healthiest thing. I don't recommend it every day, but if it, you know, in a time of emergency, use it to your advantage. Take them to go get some Taco Bell. Ask her genuinely, like, how are you feeling about this? You know, is it helping you to be in your room? Do you feel like you might be missing something? Do you feel like you're able to keep up with your studies the way mm-hmm. you want?
Yeah.
And another kind of curiosity question from a generous, open-hearted place to ask your daughter, because our teenagers are smart. They are wise. They have sometimes more wisdom than we do, really. Because they just see the world in a very unbiased kind of way. We've all got all of our stuff at this point, but our teenagers don't. So ask her to imagine herself at, you know, 30. Imagine when you're 30, because that mm-hmm. seems like you're yeah. so old. 30, my gosh. Imagine when you're 30, and if you were looking back on yourself right now, what advice would you have for yourself, or what would you think would be the way to go, to see if she can kind of reflect on years from now, am I going to be glad that I made these choices, or am I going to regret that I made these choices? Is there a better way? Because homeschooling in and of itself might be a fine option for her if she's actually doing it. It may be the best choice. I don't know.
Well, and that actually brings another question. With the families that you're working with, are you finding that that there are more and more kids that are having trouble with the lack of freedom that's sort of being dumped upon them? And, you know, we as adults, you know, we're hearing what we believe, you know, from other adults, what their position is on things like this. But do you feel like the teens are out there saying, wait a minute, we're not being heard, we're just being told what to do? Are you seeing that? Because that's what it sounds like part of her issue is.
Yeah. You know, I am not. The only teenagers that I am seeing, this is just my mm-hmm. limited experience. So I know that everybody has a different experience out there. But in my limited experience, the only teenagers that I see who tend to be extremely frustrated and unhappy have parents who are extremely frustrated and unhappy. Mm. And it's sort of that's what they are the ecosystem is, this is bad, we should be mad about it. And in situations where parents are sort of saying, it is what it is, it's not great, but it's fine, we can, it's a minor inconvenience, the kids have that attitude. So they do pick up, and maybe, and I shouldn't say parents, it could be teachers, it could be a lot of, but they pick up what the atmosphere around them says. Gotcha. Typically.
Yeah. So it might be their teachers, it might be the you know, the national media or the parents. Yes. Or whatever. They're
it could be the Instagram feed, because everybody's Instagram feed or TikTok feed is a little different.
The social media. That's just what I was going to say, is that, you know, the social media with all of the different opinions and such. So, you know, let's, if you can you sort of walk us through maybe a couple of your favorite success stories, you know, sort of like case studies. Obviously, we're not using any names, mm-hmm. but what I have found is that I've had comments that have come back to us that have said, one of the things that I like is that some of your guests will talk about an experience, and that's my experience. You know, so it's, you know, they're like, yeah, when they said this, so I found that success stories, because it starts with, you know, the issue, and mm-hmm. then takes through some of the steps that actually got them to a better place. So if you wouldn't mind, can you share a couple of those if you're comfortable with it?
Absolutely. I'm sitting here trying to think. The most obvious success stories that I know most intimately are with my own children.
Sure.
And I'm happy to share a couple of those, because they are forefront. So if you read my book or mm-hmm. have ever heard me talk anywhere, you know that one of my children had some pretty significant struggles. I would say kind of, we had a couple of years of decline, and then we had like an eighth grade year that was just a complete dumpster fire. And that's how I describe it. I think that that's a fair description. It was, mm-hmm. I did not recognize the child that I knew up until that point. And we did a lot of things. And like I said, a lot of what I found made the biggest difference in the entire family dynamic. Because when the one child was struggling, obviously I had a lot of attention diverted to the one child. My other child was sort of being ignored. I had a lot of guilt that I was ignoring my other child. I was definitely had no patience with my husband, because, you know, I was the main caregiver at that time, and he would say, well, have you tried? And I would, you know, lose it and say, yes, of course I've tried that, you know, and the mm-hmm. kinds of, just the kinds of things that happen in families, but it wasn't ideal for anyone. And when I started just saying, I'm out of control and I've got to start working on me. And it wasn't, I'm going to work on me to fix my child or doing, it was just like, I got to get a handle on this. I'm snapping mm-hmm. at people. I'm not being who I want to be. And I spent years doing that, literally, and still am. And like I said, started being real overt about what I was doing, and started with a child who was very, very, very close to any suggestions that might help. Any, you know, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this? And it won't work. I'm not going to do it. That doesn't ever work. I've tried that. You know, there was always an answer about why it wouldn't work. But with me modeling, I saw little by little just more openness to trying things on her own without my involvement. And that was great. And I have seen over the years of this, I've just seen these little successes that I don't know if you hadn't been where I was, you would maybe not even think of them as successes, but they are huge successes. One example was a recent, you know, rough patch that my child was going through. And she said to me, and she hadn't been going to therapy, because she said, I don't need therapy at the moment. And then she came to me and said, you know what? I'm feeling like I need to go back and see my therapist. Mm-hmm. Unprovoked, you know, this was all on her initiative to say, I think I'm not dealing with this well and I need support. That is huge for a child to know that they, to recognize they're having trouble and to ask and to go get the support they need, especially a child who's going to go to college in a year. I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen, because I know that when she's in college and I'm not there and I'm not there to say, hey, are you doing okay? She's on it. She's aware. She's got self-care. I also had a, this one, I always, if I try and tell this one, I will choke up, but I'm going to try and keep it together. But she teaches little kids in gymnastics, and she has a child, one of her gymnastics students had special needs, and part of his issues was that he would become overwhelmed and anxious and kind of not be able to self-regulate very well. These are little kids that they're called tumble bears. Mm-hmm. So she's teaching the tumble bears, and she's got this child who has trouble when he gets overwhelmed. And she said, you know, I'm the only teacher who knows how to help him, because all the other teachers are sort of like, hey, what's wrong with this kid? And she, because she has been there, she has a lot of compassion. And to me, that is a success story. It's a huge success story. And that is for those of your listeners who are thinking, you know, my child has these struggles. The children who have struggles are often the children who are the most compassionate and have the most empathy. And they can be such a gift to the world when they just get the tools to manage their own big emotions. They are really, they're some of the best people in the world.
Well, I love that too. And anytime that we can make a positive difference, you know, in the lives of especially young people, it makes me feel good as well. We've got another question that's coming in. And again, I thank those that take the time. This one reads, my grandchildren who live close by spend 2 weekends every month at our small Texas ranch, playing outdoors untethered. Unfortunately, my four grandkids in Portland are terribly anxious and are not doing as well. I can't wait to listen to the show to get more information on your book. I think that maybe all of us need a new perspective, calm ourselves down, and get rid of the politicians who think that they can control and keep us in fear like this. And this is from Evie in San Antonio. So your thoughts, and what I'm reading on this, I think, is that she has some grandchildren, Evie would be a female name. Anyway, she has some grandchildren that are close by that get to come out to the ranch and sort of play outdoors. And yet it seems like there are other grandchildren that are in a big city, in this case, Portland, that are considerably more anxious. That seems to be the point that I think she's making. What's your thoughts on this?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's all kinds of great research that says, you know, time in nature is as effective as, you know, antidepressants and things like that. And definitely our kids are suffering from a lack of connection with nature. And so any opportunity that they have to just be outside and unstructured, because that's another thing. And we were big city people. We had our kids in Atlanta and then moved to Houston. And so for a lot of years, we were in the heart of cities, and it was not as easy, but you still can find. And it's not just about being outside, because if a lot of kids in cities are playing t-ball or they're playing soccer or they're, you know, on a swim team, but that's structured. And what they need is the unstructured, even at a playground, it's still outside and they just get to do what they want. And if they pick up a stick and start building something or whatever, that's, it's great for kids. It's really good to have unstructured play out of doors, with minimal involvement from parents, because sometimes we want to say, let's make it into a game, or how about I'm going to organize this for you, and they don't need us to organize. They will come up with what they want to do.
I like that. And I think it also, it goes to a subject we could probably do a whole nother show on, which would be allowing them to use their imagination.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking, we just got a couple of minutes, so I just want to make sure everybody knows the book is called Stop Worrying About Your Anxious Child and How to Manage Your Child's Anxiety So You Can Relax.
Yes.
So it's a win-win, okay?
Mm-hmm. So look at it that way. It's about you relaxing.
Yes. How else? I mean, I'm sure you can. I know you can get the book on Amazon and probably anywhere you can buy books. But if they want to get a hold of you in regards to your coaching or any of the other information that you're putting out, what's the best way for them to do that?
You can find me at Guidance for the Future. So it's guidanceforthefuture.com. Okay. I've got a Guidance for the Future page on Facebook. So I'm kind of all over the place in Guidance for the Future.
But that's all right. For those of you that are driving and you can't write this down, we'll make sure that Guidance for the Future is put on our Answers Network site so that you can take that information as well. Tonya, what would be, I mean, in the last minute or two, what would be something that you want to make sure that everybody knows, or something that I didn't ask that you want to get a message out to parents of all kinds?
I think the last thing I'd love to say is, if your child is struggling, remember what I just said. A lot of the things that are great about kids who struggle with anxiety are the same things that make them struggle with anxiety. So I can say without exception, the people I have worked with, adults, anxious adults and anxious kids, always have these amazing, amazing strengths. Like, they are gifted artists, musicians. They are great. I have one client in particular who is like amazing at reading people, like can feel and pick up on every subtlety. He's actually a police officer. And imagine why you would be a great police officer if you can kind of feel the room and what's going on. And so these strengths like those often are the same things that make us more prone to anxiety. You know, being vigilant and being someone who is aware of their surroundings and aware of, you know, what's happening, super wonderful. Those people make us feel safe when we're around them, if they're at their best. When they're at their worst, they're anxious and over, their signals are going crazy and that it's too much. But at their best, when, just like me as a mom, it's that same story. At your best, that's what's great about us. And we don't want to, I think as parents, when we can focus on this is what's great about you, sometimes it gets out of whack and it makes you feel bad and makes you act in ways that aren't great. But don't forget, this is what's great about you. Because what happens is sometimes we start, it's all about the anxiety, the diagnosis, the problem. And I think it's so much better to say, let's focus on the strength that, oh, by the way, there is a problem that goes with any strength, right?
And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it's one of the sort of a pet peeve for me, which is the tag. When somebody put a tag on somebody, and I would tell some of the young people that, you know, I work with, and they'd say, oh yeah, you're like everybody else. You think I'm fill in the blank or whatever. Right. And I go, no, actually I don't. I said, you know, you're no more whatever that tag is, you know, than you are a broken arm. You know, I wouldn't address you as, oh, hey, you're a broken arm. Right. If you had a broken arm. So why would I then say that you are this? So
exactly. I do the same thing. The words are important. You are not depressed. Mm-hmm. You may feel depressed. You are not anxious. You may feel anxious.
You're feeling anxiety. Yes, yeah. Exactly. So good. I feel such synergy with you. So Tonya, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for writing the book. Thank you for getting the message out there. And if you'd like to connect outside of this, there are some organizations that I think your book would be really good for, you know, that a part of. I think there's a lot of, there's, it's the, which is National, NATSAP, National Association of Therapeutic Schools and Programs. To me, this should be, you know, reading for everybody, you know, in that. So if there's anything that we can do to help you get the word out, just let us know.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I loved being here and I love this conversation.
All right. Well, thank you. And for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we're going to be joined by Matthew Wood to discuss the new book, Holistic Medicine and the Extracellular Matrix. It's the science of healing at the cellular level. And this is something that I'm really looking forward to, because I've been trying to learn as much as possible about our cells, about our mitochondria, and all the things that we can do to be as healthy and sharp as possible. Now, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can just go to it, go to our website, and subscribe to our show, either through our website, or you can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, BeatChu, HoogeTube, and many other popular podcast formats. If you subscribe to the show at that way, it will be sent to you each week. We're not going to send you a whole lot of other stuff, but it helps us greatly to be able to continue to bring on incredible guests like Tanya that we just had. So, and the next time that you're on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast, honestly. You may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.